Hello, Fabrizio. What was your motive to do such a research?
The main motive is that the Great Recession has polarized the views about the advantages and costs of the European Union and the Euro membership. And skepticism about the European Union and also the Euro is growing in many European countries. However, the debate has been, and it is, highly ideological and often based on emotional statements more than hard facts. And we thought it would be important to have a rigorous and transparent assessment of the economic benefits of your entry in this situation.
In the interviews that you have given so far, or your colleagues, and also in the articles themselves, you claim that the evidence on the economic gain or loss of individual countries after the EU accession is poor. How come, and does it mean, as you imply, that all the debates on benefits of or losses from the EU membership have just been building on sand so far?
No, there are many studies on the benefits of the European Union accession, and most of them are based on the effects of trade, international trade integration. However, the results are considered, even by the same authors, are not very strong and robust. In a sense, they are there, but you know, it's not clear whether they are really true. As most of the studies look at how countries that entered the European Union did compared to some group of other countries that could serve as a reference, as a comparator. But this is very hard to find what is a correct comparator, and so far studies were not able to answer to what we believe is the key question, that is, what would have been the income per capita of, for instance, the Czech Republic, if the Czech Republic did not enter the European Union when it did, the moment it did. One needs to have a really what we call a counterfactual, a relevant counterfactual.
Can you briefly explain to your method, this synthetic counterfactual? What does it mean?
Yes. Well, this method has been applied in economics by two Spanish economists in 2003 in a paper on American Economic Review, and consists in building what is called a synthetic or virtual country that is a clone of the country we are considering before the treatment, so before, in our case, the EU entry. So the synthetic country is derived by choosing optimally the weights to attribute to the other countries that are in a pool of what is called a donor sample, a country that potentially can be used to build the synthetic country, in order to match as closely as possible the behavior of the relevant variable, in our case is income per capita, of the country we consider. So the selection is based on a set of determinants of income per capita, for instance, education, the economic structure, and all the standard variables used in the economic literature. So in the end, the method allows to select a group of countries that behave as the country we are considering before the country is subject to the shock of EU entry. So the quality of this method is that before the country enters the EU, behaves as the synthetic country, as the group of countries that the method selects. Then after the shock, if you observe divergence, the idea would be that this divergence has been caused by the shock, in our case, the entry to the EU. Because if the two behaved almost exactly the same until the date of the shock, then the divergence after that can be attributed to the shock. Something that's similar to experiments that are done in other fields when you cannot redo the experiment, for instance, in experiments on the effectiveness of the use of medicine. Then you do your own experiment and build a set of people who some of them are subject to the treatment, others are not, then you may be able to identify the effect of the medicine. In our case, we cannot do the experiment in that way, so but if we do it by looking at the experience before the treatment on the data of the countries.
Yeah, countries are not mice.
Yes, exactly. Fortunately.
One more thing, you mentioned also studies on economic effects after, trade liberalization or adopting the euro, entering the single market, or comparing EU countries to some reference countries. What is the difference from your research that focuses on EU entry and EU membership? What does it involve?
Yes, we focus on the EU entry per se. In other words, we identify the date of entry as what we call the shock that the country receives. And so we isolate the pure effect of entry from many specific effects that you mentioned, could be trade integration and other areas that could be actually achieved by countries even without entering the EU. For instance, one can have trade liberalization outside the EU as part of accession to the World Trade Organization.
So the EU entry means, I don't know, also adjusting to EU legislation, and that's what it concretely means.
Exactly. All the requirements, especially for instance for the EU enlargement, satisfying all the requirements for entering the EU. So the idea that at the time a country enters the EU has satisfied a whole set of criteria associated specifically to EU entry. And we believe that this is the main channel for having economic impact, namely the encouragement, the incentive to make institutional change in the countries that enter the EU.
So basically, in other words, if I understand it correctly, you also measure the effectiveness or the impact that actually the design of EU legislation has. I mean, how is it designed and how it affects the countries, don't you?
Well, although we don't look at it specifically, but we assume that it is associated to the entry. So it's possible, for instance, that over time the requirements have been different and this may have affected in different way entry. So, for instance, in the requirements for entry in the 2004 enlargement were quite different from previous enlargements. So countries had to do much more than before to satisfy the acquis communautaire, and they had to transform all the institutions, whereas before the requirements were a little bit softer and milder. But we don't study specifically this element of these requirements. We identify the date of entry, some possible anticipation effects as the shock that the country has, and we try to see how the country does after these shocks.
Now, to your results, if we divide the bouts of enlargement and focus on them individually, is it possible to say that it paid off to enter the EU more in certain years or together with certain countries than others? And if so, why?
Well, we have studied the main four enlargements, 1973, 1980s, what we call the Southern Enlargement, then the 1995, which is the Northern Enlargement of Austria, Sweden and Finland, and then the last one, we call it the Eastern Enlargement. However, we find different effects, but with the strongest effect, the largest gain for the southern enlargement, so Spain, Greece and Portugal, except for Greece, and followed by the eastern enlargement, and then the 1973. The smallest effects are found in 1995, so for the average group of countries. However, we don't find simple explanation for that. So it's not true that when countries are poorer, they gain more. And also, it's not clear whether entering late is better than entering early. So we find differences, but we cannot say that either the time of the entry or the characteristic in terms of income per capita make a difference.
Do you know what the difference makes or not?
So in the end, we tried, once we found the effects for all the countries, in all the enlargements, we tried to explain why some countries benefit more than others. And as I said before, so we ran a sort of an empirical analysis of this effect, and we found that the main variables that may affect this the ability to exploit the benefits of EU entry are financial integration, trade openness of the country, and the euro accession. Mm-hmm. And we also consider some institutional variables for the countries. So in the end, however, we found that these three elements, especially financial integration, trade integration, the euro, bring larger benefits to the countries. But this is an area for which additional research is needed. So for instance, we found that Greece did not benefit from entry. It's the only country that did worse after. So we can conjecture that Greece was not ready to enter. But the underlying fundamental reason why Greece was the only country that did not do it requires additional studies.
Your research shows that both poor and rich countries benefited economically from the enlargement, but as you suggest, the 1995 enlargement wasn't all that beneficial as 1973. Why is that? Is the explanation only economic, or as your research suggests, there are also some other elements?
The 1995 enlargement of Austria, Sweden and Finland, for us, did not bring so much benefit, because if our idea that the main role of EU entry is to encourage institutional change, to force institutional change, probably these countries had already done it before. And the reason why they did not enter the EU, they joined so late, was probably the Cold War. And so when the international political environment changed, they immediately entered. So there was not really a major economic reason for entering in that date.
And how did the so-called rich countries benefit or lost when poor countries joined? Did you also look at that?
No, we don't do it specifically, but we can follow year by year the effects, and we don't see that the effects become smaller because of the entry of the countries, or the eastern countries. We don't see negative effects.
Of course, I'm from the Czech Republic, so I have to ask specifically about the enlargement from 2004. What would have happened if these countries didn't join? Where would they be today or in 2008? I mean, if you can speak as much concretely about the Czech Republic, the better.
Yes. But yeah, I have to say the Czech Republic is one of the countries that benefited the least in our group of countries. I mean, this is what the data tell us. But still, there were benefits. And we compute that in the first 5 years of entry, if you assume that the true date of economic entry is 1998, because there was a big anticipation of the effect of entry for recent countries, then the Czech Republic would have been 2% below its income per capita if it did not enter in 2003, and 6% below in 2008. However, the Czech Republic did better only than with respect to Slovakia, but it's much even much less than on average for all countries. For all enlargement, it was 12%, and it benefited much less than other countries in the Eastern enlargement. So this is another issue I think it's very important for economists in the Czech Republic and maybe for policymakers to try to understand why the Czech Republic did not benefit as much as other countries, if our data, I mean, if our results are in a sense are correct or relevant.
Do your data show something more concrete that you could mention already, like if you have it in your head now?
As I said, the reason for all countries, and then the main factors are financial integration, mm-hmm. trade openness, and the euro. These are the most relevant. And so one could say that for the Czech Republic, and the Czech Republic did not join the euro, so this may be not help the Czech Republic to exploit the benefits. But it's not so obvious, because Slovakia did worse and joined the euro. But the other thing could be that the Czech Republic of the Eastern European countries was the one that, in terms of financial integration, waited a little bit more than the others, for instance, to let the banking sector, to let the Western European banks enter the banking sector, as you know, the Baltic states and other EU countries did before. But I have to be honest, given that we look at the average effect for the whole sample of enlargement, to identify specifically the reasons of a country like the Czech Republic, it would require a sort of case study. So I'm not there saying more than that, I mean, because I could be wrong.
One more thing on the Czech Republic. How was the synthetic Czech Republic counted? That's what I found very exciting in your explanation notes or in the articles that you always say that, for example, synthetic Lithuania was counted as Ukraine or something. Do you remember how the synthetic Czech Republic was counted?
Yeah, the Czech Republic, I remember also, because the synthetic is formed by Albania for a small amount, and then Japan, South Korea is the largest weight, and Thailand also the very big weight. So it's interesting, because actually we find that these Asian countries actually replicate quite well the Czech Republic before accession.
There was one more thing that you kept mentioning in the articles, and that's the anticipation of the membership, that it's quite important, and the anticipation itself may have positive economic effects. Why is that?
Yes, because, you know, especially we found it for the 2004 enlargement, and as I said before, this is the enlargement that required an enormous amount of institutional reform that was done over a rather long period of time. So it was clear at the end of the 90s and, you know, the beginning of the 2000s that these countries would enter the EU, and they were basically preparing the entry by doing all the reforms to satisfy the acquis communautaire. At that time, actually, I was working at the beginning of the 2000 European Commission on the Eastern enlargement, and I remember perfectly that the perception was that these countries would enter, for sure. And so from our data, the other data show that if you take 1998, it seems that the benefits started to started there right after the Russian crisis. I mean, these countries were already benefiting from the idea that they would have joined. So it's like 6 years at least before the actual date of enlargement. So we call this economic date relevant for this enlargement, which is the due to the anticipation effect. So we can already assume that in 2003, the Czech Republic gained 2% by being involved in the process of accession. So that's the way you can see it. So from some other countries, it was much bigger than that.
You have already said that the only country that didn't benefit from entering the EU is Greece. Well, you have already suggested why it may be so, but is it somehow linked to the current Greek problems? Does it mean that your research supports the idea of Grexit?
Well, to give a short answer, no. Our study shows that Greece was not ready, and it, for us, was very interesting to see that the country that started the euro crisis was the country in our study did not benefit from EU entry. So, but our study says that Greece was not ready. It doesn't say that Greece will benefit by exiting now, because Greece now is different from when it entered, and also, this is very important, the being in the EU induced some reform in the Greek economy, not very important as in other countries, but it did. For instance, the financial sector in Greece was heavily reformed, and Greece was doing, before the crisis, was doing better, so it was regaining some of the lost gap that it had before. So, but definitely our study doesn't show that the foreign country did not benefit by entry, would benefit by exiting. So that's very important to distinguish that. We have a European and a Euro framework, which is very imperfect. It doesn't, may not be working perfectly and may have lots of shortcomings. It doesn't mean that the countries, and most countries, would benefit by exiting it. It's like the cost of exiting could be larger than the benefits, even though the benefits of being part of it so far have not been very large. So the idea would be to understand what are the factors that the positive in the virtuous cycle of EU accession created a huge benefit for countries, and we believe that these are institutional reforms. So probably Greece still needs to do a lot in that area, and that would be the optimal thing to do instead of exiting.
Now that your research is ready, do you expect or are you prepared that Eurosceptic groups will cast doubt on it, claiming, for example, that this is mere accounting and behind it there is deeper and more grave political and economic and structural changes that have happened in the member countries after accessing the EU and as a result of EU regulations and acquis communautaire that may negatively influence the country's economic performance and competitiveness in the long-term side?
Yes, absolutely, and I expect we already have some objections by the Eurosceptics, especially in the UK, and what we want to say is that our study shows in a very transparent way, so it could be replicated, it could be criticized, what we call these benefits, and then I would take the result that on average, and for what is impressive is that we found that in most countries, except for Greece, we found positive benefits. Now, the benefits can be different. We don't mean that the European Union works perfectly. Quite the opposite. Doesn't mean that. But it's clear that in the debate, people have to start looking at numbers. They cannot just going around saying, oh, all the problems that we face are due to Europe. This is what we want to challenge. This is not true. People are discussing not on the basis of hard data. They are not discussing on the basis of true data. They are just discussing on the basis of ideology and just playing on the sentiment of the people. And what is important for me, which is not part of our study, but it's something that I think is very important now, that the Euroscepticism and the European, the growing amount increasing to Europe is in fact revealing the weaknesses of the national politicians. So I'm speaking about Italy, for instance. If you look at carefully what happens, the Euroscepticism is growing in countries which are not satisfied with the local politicians, with the local politics. So I think it's very important at the European level to understand this and to make an effort to keep this project, European project, and to improve it, not to discard it and weaken to the point in which the whole project can collapse, which is not something that we can rule out, starting from the euro starting and going to the European Union. I mean, I would like the debate to be based on strong evidence. And to me, if one looks at the economic effects, the effects of Europe are amazing. The benefits are incredible. And that's something that we have to keep in mind. And there's no other part of the world that has been able to do that. This is something that we have to keep in mind. And then we have to work on the limitations, on the shortcomings, and so on. What the Eurosceptics are saying, some of the things that they say are correct. I mean, the function of the European institutions is not democratic, there's maybe too much bureaucracy, there's an intervention in the local economy, in some cases inefficient. But the whole, I mean, the main thrust of European integration, I think, is something that's very important, is unique in history, and it's something that I think we should defend.